Drake, Future, and Young Thug, Way Too Sexy.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Dan Friedel reports on the Taliban's move to further limit education for women and girls in Afghanistan. Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Women and girls in Afghanistan suffered another setback in their push for equal access to education on Wednesday. Many universities closed their doors to female students hoping to take exams and attend class. Reports by Voice of America and the Associated Press said young women could be seen crying after they were not permitted to go into their university buildings. Taliban fighters in Kabul and other Afghan cities blocked the students from going into their classrooms. The action came one day after the Taliban administration shared a letter that said private and public universities should ban women and girls as soon as possible. Rahimullah Nadim is a spokesman for Kabul University. He said classes for female students had ended, but some were permitted to come inside to finish paperwork and other business. He said 4 graduation events took place Wednesday. A student named Fatima attends a private university in Kabul. She told VOA she was supposed to take her final exams on Wednesday, but she and her classmates could not get in. All of us were crying and refusing to leave the gates for several hours and begging Taliban authorities to let us take our exams, she said. The move by Taliban leaders in Kandahar will hurt the nation's chances of creating diplomatic connections with outside governments. Those governments and other aid organizations have been holding back financial help because of what appears to be the Taliban's return to their extreme version of Islamic law, known as Sharia law. The Taliban gained control of Afghanistan in the summer of 2021 after U.S. forces pulled out. The new Taliban leadership promised changes that included giving women permission to go to school and have a public life. Rina Amiri is a human rights advisor for the U.S. State Department. In a Twitter message, she said, "The decision removes any doubt that they're reverting to the extreme policies of the 90s. Before the announcement of the latest restriction on women, the government had banned girls from middle and high school education, restricted women from seeking most work, and ordered them to wear burqas, head-to-toe clothing, in public. 2 Muslim nations, Qatar and Pakistan, criticized the university ban and asked the Taliban to reconsider the decision. Antony Blinken is the U.S. Secretary of State. He said, no other country prevents women from seeking education. The Taliban cannot expect to be a legitimate member of the international community until they respect the rights of all in Afghanistan, Blinken said. Blinken said the Taliban's restrictions have likely cost the Afghan economy $1 billion because only half of its population is working and studying. No country can thrive when half its population is held back, he said. Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, said he was deeply alarmed by the decision. He added that it would hurt the country's future. Experts on Afghanistan criticized the move. Abdallah Abdallah was a top leader in Afghanistan's former government. He called taking education away from girls regrettable in a message published on Twitter. Ahmad Saidi, an expert on Afghan politics, said the world must find another way to interact with the Taliban. But the issue of recognition, he said, is over. I'm Dan Friedel.
The creator of video game Fortnite has agreed to pay a total of $520 million in government fines and repayments. A government agency that oversees trade accused Fortnite of illegally collecting children's private information and carrying out misleading sales methods. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, announced this week that it had reached an agreement with Epic Games to settle two cases against the company. The FTC is a federal agency that seeks to protect the public from deceptive business methods and unfair competition. The settlement requires Epic Games to pay a $275 million fine for collecting personal information on Fortnite players under the age of 13 without getting their permission or informing their parents. Another part of the agreement seeks $245 million to be paid to Fortnite users who the FTC says were tricked into making unwanted purchases while playing the game. Epic Games released Fortnite in 2017, and it has grown to become one of the most popular online video games. The FTC said in a news release that the game has more than 400 million players worldwide. Fortnite is free to download and play, but players can pay for some additional elements, such as costumes and dance moves. The FTC accused Epic Games of using so-called dark pattern methods to trick players into making unwanted purchases. Dark patterns are online tricks designed to get users to do something they might not have meant to do. The FTC said Epic's use of such methods included misleading button designs that led players to unknowingly make purchases. For example, players could be charged while trying to wake the game from a sleeping state or while the game was still loading. Users could also be charged just by pressing buttons while trying to look at an object they might want to buy. Such methods led to hundreds of millions of dollars in unauthorized charges for users, the FTC said. The privacy accusations involved the collection of personal information from children under age 13 who played Fortnite. The FTC said the data collection violated the agency's Children's Online Privacy Protections Rule, or COPPA. That rule sets requirements on operators of websites or online services directed at children under 13 years of age. The FTC said its investigation found that Epic knew many children were playing Fortnite and that it collected personal information from them without getting parental permission. In addition, the agency said Epic required unreasonable methods for parents requesting that their children's personal information be removed. Epic also violated another FTC rule by turning on real-time voice and text communications for children and teenagers by default, the agency said. This violation could result in children and teens being connected online with strangers to play Fortnite together. This action harmed children and teens, the FTC said. In some cases, children and teens were subjected to bullying and threatening behavior while playing Fortnite, the agency added. The FTC said Epic employees had expressed concerns as early as 2017 about Fortnite's default settings. Epic said in a statement it had agreed to accept the FTC settlement because it wants to be at the forefront of user protection and provide the best experience for our players. The company said no developer creates a game with the intention of ending up here. Epic said it had already taken steps to improve the design of its payment system to provide the largest amount of clarity to players making purchase decisions. Games should go above and beyond to make sure players even more clearly understand when they are making a purchase with real or digital money to prevent accidental purchases, the company said. To protect children, Epic said it had increased the number of parental controls in the game. It also said it created a new kind of account for players under 13 that disables some parts of the game, including communications and in-game purchases. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, Brian Lynn joins me to talk a little bit more about today's technology report. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
In today's report, we learned about a large settlement the U.S. Federal Trade Commission just reached with Epic Games, maker of the popular online video game Fortnite. There is a word used in the story, deceptive, that is often used to describe misleading or unfair business practices. Can you expand more on the meaning of this word as it is used in your report?
Sure, Ashley. So the basic definition of deceptive is something that gives an appearance or impression that is different from the actual truth. A main synonym of the word is misleading. And in my story about the FTC settlement, the term is used to describe sales methods the agency accused Epic of using to trick Fortnite players into making in-game purchases unknowingly. Some deceptive business methods are illegal.
Can the word also be used to describe things not related to business activities?
Yes, it can. For example, the word is sometimes used in place of the word lying, which means a person is not telling the truth. Instead of lying, one could say someone is being deceptive. Another way to use it would be to describe false information that appears in the media or on social media.
And I know there is also a verb form of the word. What would be an example of that usage?
Yes, that's right. An example of that would be to say the FTC accused Epic Games of deceiving Fortnite players. Or a student might deceive a teacher by telling untruths about why they were not able to finish their homework, for example.
Okay, thanks again for joining me on the show, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In July of 1861, Union soldiers from the North and Confederate soldiers from the South fought the first major battle in the American Civil War. They clashed at Manassas, or Bull Run, Virginia, less than 50 kilometers from Washington. The Union soldiers fought fiercely, but two large Confederate forces broke the Union attack. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about some of the other early battles of the Civil War.
Northerners had expected to win the Battle of Bull Run. They believed the Confederacy would fall if the Union won a big military victory early in the war. Now, however, there was great fear that Southern soldiers would seize Washington. The Union needed to build and train an army quickly. President Abraham Lincoln named General George McClellan to do this. McClellan was 34 years old. The young general had two important tasks. He must defend Washington from attack, and he must build an army to strike at enemy forces in Virginia. McClellan wasted no time. He put thousands of troops into position around the city, and he built 48 forts. After this rush of activity, however, little more happened for a long time. McClellan told his wife, "I shall take my own time to make an army that will be sure of success. As soon as I feel my army is well organized and well trained and strong enough, I will force the rebels to a battle." McClellan kept making excuses for why he would not move against the enemy. His excuses became a continuing source of trouble for President Lincoln. The public, the press, and politicians all demanded that McClellan do something. They wanted to win the war, and win it right away.
McClellan commanded the biggest army in the Union, the Army of the Potomac, But it was not the only army. Others were battling Confederate forces in the West. The Confederates had moved up through Tennessee into the border state of Kentucky. They built forts and other defensive positions across the southern part of the state. They also blocked as many railroads and rivers as they could. Their job was to keep Union forces from invading the South through Kentucky. One of the Union generals in the area was Ulysses Grant. Grant had served in the Army for 20 years. He had fought in America's war against Mexico and had won honors for his bravery. When that war ended, he was sent to an army base far from his wife and children. He did not like being without them, and he did not like being an officer in peacetime. Grant began to drink too much alcohol. He began to be a problem. In 1854, he was asked to leave the army. When the Civil War started, Grant organized a group of unpaid soldiers in Illinois. With the help of a member of Congress, he was named a general. All of the other Union generals knew Ulysses Grant. Few had any faith in his abilities. They were sure he would always fail.
Grant, however, had faith in himself and his men. He believed he could force Confederate soldiers to withdraw from both Kentucky and Tennessee. Then he would be free to march directly into the Deep South, Mississippi. Two Confederate forts stood in Grant's way. They were in Tennessee, close to the Kentucky border. United States Navy gunboats captured the first, Fort Henry, on the Tennessee River. That fort was easy to attack and not well defended. The fighting was over by the time Grant and his men got there. The second, Fort Donelson, was nearby on the Cumberland River. It was stronger and defended by 20,000 soldiers. Grant surrounded the fort and let the Navy gunboats shell it. The fighting there lasted several days.
At one point, the Confederates tried to break out of the fort and escape. They opened a hole in the Union line and began to retreat. Suddenly, however, their commanding officer decided it would be wrong to retreat. He ordered them back to the fort. After that, there was no choice. The Confederates would have to surrender. The commanding officer sent a message to General Grant. What were the terms of surrender? Grant's answer was simple. No terms except unconditional and immediate surrender. The Confederates gave up Fort Donelson. Grant took 14,000 prisoners. It was the greatest Union victory since the start of the war. Ulysses Grant was a hero. Newspapers called him Unconditional Surrender Grant.
After the Union victory at Fort Donelson, Confederate forces withdrew from Tennessee. They moved farther south and began to regroup at Corinth, Mississippi. Confederate generals hoped to build one big army to stop Ulysses Grant. They would have to move fast. Grant was marching toward Corinth with 40,000 men. Another 35,000, under the command of Don Buell, were to meet him on the way. Grant arrived in the area first. He waited for Buell, 30 kilometers from Corinth, near a small country meeting hall called Shiloh Church. Confederate General Albert Sidney Johnston was waiting, too. He had more than 40,000 men, about the same as Grant, and he was expecting another 20,000. But when he learned that Grant was nearby, he decided not to wait. He would attack immediately.
Johnston did not know it, but his attack came as a surprise to the Union Army. Union officers had refused to believe reports that Johnston was on the move. They said his army was not strong enough to attack. Union troops did not prepare defensive positions. They had no protection when the battle began. The fighting at Shiloh was the bitterest of the war. It was not one battle, but many. Groups of men fought each other all across the wide battlefield. From a distance, they shot at each other. Close up, they cut each other with knives. The earth became red with blood. The dead and wounded soon lay everywhere. At first, the Confederates pushed Grant's army back. They had only to break through one more line, and victory would be theirs. But in the thick of the struggle, General Johnston was shot in the leg. The bullet cut through an artery. Johnston bled to death before help arrived. Any hope for a southern victory at Shiloh died with him. By the time the fighting began again the next day, General Buell had arrived to help Grant. The Confederate Army retreated. The Union Army let it go.
Shiloh. The word itself came to mean death and destruction. The Battle of Shiloh had brought home to the American people, both of the North and South, the horror of war. It was the first time so many men, 100,000, had fought against each other in the Western world. It was the American people's first real taste of the bloodiness of modern warfare. As one soldier who fought there said, it was too shocking, too horrible. I hope to God that I may never see such things again. The North won the Battle of Shiloh, but it paid a very high price for victory. More than 13,000 Union soldiers were killed, wounded, or missing. On the Confederate side, more than 10,000 soldiers were killed or wounded. The North celebrated the news of its victory, but joy quickly turned to anger when the public learned of the heavy losses. People blamed General Grant. They demanded that President Lincoln dismiss him. Lincoln thought of the two men who were now his top military commanders, McClellan and Grant. They were so different. McClellan organized an army and then did nothing. Grant organized an army and moved. Lincoln said of Grant, "I cannot do without this man. He fights."
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.